Hi, this is Bruce Ryder, Five Finger Death Punch, and you're listening to the Jay Franzi Show.
Welcome to the Jay Franzi Show, a behind-the-curtain look at the entertainment industry with insights you can't pay for and stories you've never heard. Now, here's your host, Jay Franzi.
Well, hello, 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 and welcome to the show. I am Jay Franzi, and this is your backstage pass to the entertainment industry. This week, we get to talk with a recording artist. We get to talk with Dani Stefanetti. We'll talk to her about what it was like to perform at the Indian Wells Tennis Garden, what her writing and production process is like, and we'll discuss her feature in Guitar World magazine. Now, Dani is not only an amazing singer, a songwriter, but she's also an amazing guitar player, and I can't wait to talk to her about that tonight. So if you would like to join in, comment, or fire off any questions, please head over to jayfranzi.com. Now, let's get started. Dani, my friend, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me on your great show. It's an honor to be here today.
There are so many things I want to talk to you about tonight, but can you just get us started by telling us about your most recent event over at the Indian Wells Tennis Garden?
Oh, wow. Well, I'm going to giggle. I'm allowed to laugh on this show,
right? No, there's no laughter whatsoever on this show.
Well, you know how it is. Something I didn't know about you is that you were living and working in Nashville for 20 years with some of the greats, and I wouldn't have known that about you. And there's the spontaneous things that happen in the music industry that make it what it is. And that's, I guess, what drives us to keep doing it, because it's those moments of lows, but then you get those weird highs. Like, they come out of nowhere usually. You can't try for it. Well, that was one of those moments at the Indian Wells Tennis Garden. I was playing a corporate show upstairs. And that day I got a call from my agent, and it was an honor. I was asked to sing America the Beautiful, and I didn't know the song, but I said, yeah, I'll learn it. And they said, you got to have it ready by 7:30. And I said, where are you putting me? And they said, oh, in the stadium, in the middle of the stadium. I said, oh, can I write the lyrics on my arm or on a sheet of paper? They said, no, there's drones. It's getting televised. I went, oh, I don't know this song. I'm not American yet. And anyway, I learned this song, memorized it, put the chords down and everything, and then I got out there and it was over 16,000 people, and then they said, on your last note, we're going to let off the fireworks. I said, I really got to get this right, otherwise I'm going to be in the bloopers tomorrow.
That's too funny. So you say you don't know the song, and that's because you're not from here originally. You're from Perth over in Australia. So
I am. I'm an Aussie.
Holy cow, what a transition to make, right? Can you tell us a little bit about what that transition was like for you?
Well, you know, I've actually been invited to sing the American national anthem a couple of times, and now America the Beautiful. So this country has definitely embraced me. And the transition coming out here from Australia to America was really scary, but I didn't really think about it too much. I already knew as a kid I wanted to be out here one day. I knew it was my calling. But when that time came, I just made the move. I got on a plane and sold everything and just did it. And here I am. And I don't regret any of it. You know, you're only young once. You got to try. If you know deep down this is your calling, and I know music is all I know. I live and breathe it. I had to be in the hub of it all, which is America.
You know, that's what it's like. I mean, you have to live and breathe it. If you don't live and breathe it, you're not going to make it in this industry. Yeah. It's one of those things where your passion has to outweigh everything else in your life. It's crazy to me. But what was the hardest thing for you to leave the country, to go live somewhere else?
Well, leaving my family and friends was very difficult, but they fully supported me and they wanted what was best for me and what I wanted to do, what I love. So I guess I don't think there are any real negatives about it. It was more just a positive thing that happened. And I just love being out here. I love making opportunities every day for moving forward with my career. And this is a country of opportunity, that's for sure. I think that's one of my koalas on my set. 1 second. Sorry, Jay, one of my koalas. Did you hear that?
I did hear that, yes.
That was one of my koalas. Sorry about that.
No, you get a cat over there is what you have. If you pulled out a koala, I would have just been your best friend for life.
Have you ever heard a koala?
No, I've never seen a koala. What do you...
was a koala talking?
Yeah, I didn't know if they made noises, but if you pulled out a koala right there, I would have been your best friend for life. I don't know if you
like
could see
cat.
It. Look, there's a bear head on my wall back there. There's all these bears all over my office. If you pulled out a koala, I would have just been all over this. This would have been fantastic. A cat? Yeah, I've seen one or two of those before. So you moved to the States. Did your family, friends, anybody ever move out here with you, or have they come out to visit? Anything to make your transition a little easier?
Yeah, I've had some visitors and friends come out to see me, and I've been so busy doing all the live shows out here. I haven't had a moment to really stop. I haven't had a moment to stop, and it's just been like full on. But I hope to go back at Christmas time or something like that.
Well, Christmas, that'd be their summer, right?
Yeah, that's their summer. Exactly.
Yeah. I went to school at the University of Queensland, but I did it online. I did not do it in person. I would have loved to have done it in person. It would have been a great place to be. So I'm very familiar with the time change.
I was going to say, because I have a great zoo out there in Queensland.
Yeah, no, I didn't even get to go out there for the graduation. I really wanted to, but I did not get that opportunity.
It's great. Really great out there.
Perth is on the west side, though, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like the west coast, like where I am right now, but on the other side of the globe.
the other west coast. But you had some opportunities out there as well. Before we get into what's going on with you here, can you tell me what it was like performing at the Sydney Opera House?
Oh, yeah, that was for the Music Oz Awards back in 2012. I won Spiritual Song of the Year for a track I wrote called Victory, and they invited me to play before the awards at the Sydney Opera House. It was such an honour and such an amazing Australian venue right there in Sydney. So that was a really cool moment in time, and I'll never forget that.
It's a beautiful place.
It was an amazing night. Yeah, and then I had like a red carpet event before, and it was like the best trip ever.
How'd that make you feel?
It was amazing. I didn't know I was going to win an award, but like just being invited like a couple of days before and had to get my flights together and everything. Once again, it was a spontaneous like thing I didn't expect. I was nominated for a couple of categories, so when they called out Spiritual Song of the Year, I forgot I even entered into that one. So I was like shocked.
So you're performing there. I mean, yeah. Is that as big of a venue as we think it is?
Yeah, they have all different kind of areas of the opera house. So yeah, the awards are in one section, and then they have the red carpet section, and they have time where people mingle. And yeah, so it has all different rooms in there.
Were you nervous?
I was more nervous the other night at the tennis, because that was my biggest crowd I think I've ever played to.
The one at the tennis event?
Yeah, and then it got televised on the tennis channel. So that was really cool, and I got to see some of the tennis stars. And my mum's a big fan of tennis, so I remember when I first moved out here to America, I packed my tennis dress in my luggage. And, you know, you got to pick wisely what you bring when you're moving countries.
The tennis dress was perfect.
I put this little tennis dress in my luggage, and my mom said, "Why are you packing that? You don't even play tennis." I said, "Yeah, I'm okay at it. I might need it." Well, there you go. I did need it, but I didn't wear it.
And did you wear it?
But maybe I'll wear it now, because I really like the tennis now.
That's pretty cool. So you're playing there, and you said you were more nervous there. So, and it's not just being more nervous. Like you said, you had to learn a song from scratch to perform in such a short period of time. And did you play the acoustic along with it?
Oh, we didn't have enough time to organize like the wireless system or anything. So I had to actually use some Bose like headset so that I canceled myself singing. So all I could hear was me coming out of my head, the guitar and my voice, because otherwise it would relay off the stadium. That's how echoey it was. So that was even crazy too. So I was lucky I was in time.
That's pretty cool. So you say in time, I mean, again, I guess I may have missed it, but were you playing the guitar along with yourself, or were you playing to a track?
I was playing live.
So it was just you and a guitar.
Just me and the guitar. Yeah, I know, right?
Talk about some pressure, right? So you made it through. Once you made it through, and it was done, you know, did it feel like just a ton of bricks off your shoulders?
Well, I enjoyed the moment because I knew I could nail it. But I saw the fireworks on the last note, and I kind of heard everybody, and I went, whoa. It was like that. I can wake up tomorrow knowing that I got it, because like the worst thing would be like waking up and going, oh, what happened yesterday? I didn't get the song, filmed it, you know? That would be, I don't want to wake up like that. I want to know that it's good.
That's good. Yeah, the good experience. Most people, it's hard. You perform like that. You're kind of out of the moment. You don't really get to experience it or to take it in. It's good that you were able to do that, but did you go back and watch it after the fact?
Yes, I did. And I just like was more exciting watching it back, because I actually got to just really see how grand the space is. Because when I went out there into the stadium, I had to tell myself, don't look at how many people are there, because that will put me off. Just get the lyrics, just sing it with your heart. And that's all I was thinking.
That's funny.
Because it was just such an honor to sing that song.
I couldn't imagine it. No, definitely not for me. That's why I sit here and you do that. That's perfect.
Yes.
So did you get any feedback from anybody when that was over?
Yeah, I sent it back to everybody in Australia, and I sent it to a lot of people that follow my music, and I posted it on social media, and a lot of people were so encouraging, and I guess it gives other people a dream, like if they're coming from a different country and wanting to achieve, you know, play to a lot of people and maybe fulfill something on their bucket list, it is possible, because I did it. So,
well, you've done quite a bit so far. I mean, like you mentioned earlier, the awards, you've won quite a bit of awards. You've had some experience with being in the studio. You've had experience putting videos together. I mean, you've done quite a bit to date. And I'd like to, I guess, jump into some of that stuff, because that's what we're here for. We want to know how you did things, how things came together. So you have an upcoming album. So can you tell us a little bit about what makes it special and how it came together?
Danny's Diamonds is a collection of work that I put together. Some of the songs were written in 2022, and majority of them were written in March 2023. All of them except for The Timing was on My Heart's Alarm, which were the year before. But I came back from Nashville. I was on the ABC. Sandy Kenyon did a great piece on me. Thank you, Sandy Kenyon. And that was aired over in New York with all the taxi cabs, and got some big exposure on the East Coast. And I met William Lee Golden from the Oak Ridge Boys. We have like the same team. Anyway, so I was writing some songs with him, and him and his wife took me to the Opry and got to be backstage and all that. And you'd think I'd come back from Nashville like writing, you know, a country record. Well, I called up my manager after that trip, and, you know, got to meet William and all that. It was a very great trip, you know. And I said, well, what's next, Jeff? What am I doing next? He said, I think you should go, you know, more rock now. And I said, oh, I used to do rock music, you know, when I was more 17, but I haven't gone into that in a while. And I was doing more like folk ballads and things like that. Anyway, so 2 afternoons later, I wrote 6 songs each day in 2 afternoons, and the whole record was basically written. And I had a whole thing of cup of teas and like guitars and cables out by my pool. And I was just like cranking out these songs and put my voice memo on, and it one after the other just kept flowing out of me. And that's the way I like to write songs, prolifically, where I'm not even thinking. Like, they're the best songs that I personally, that's my writing style. Like, don't think, just let it come out.
So how do you approach that?
I just started jamming on chords. I actually like it when I was plugged in. I had the electric and I was just like trying to loop myself and come up with some cool riffs, and those riffs would then translate into da, da, da. When I'm with you, feels like I'm drifting on water. And then it just kept flowing out, and each song was different. And I didn't even have a restroom break. I just literally just kept plugging through because I knew there was something in here in this session. And sometimes I will get a lot of songs come out in one sitting and then nothing for a while because I'm like, I'm too busy with my gigs. And then when I do sit down and take it seriously, sometimes I get a lot of songs. And that was one of those moments. And I showed my manager, and we were talking about getting like a trio, like a drummer and a bass player. And we were trying to add up how much it would cost to like do it all in the studio. And it was just getting all too hard, you know. Like, he was like, these songs are great. Like, I can imagine what they're going to be with drums and bass. But then we were trying to do the logistics of it. And I was living like in a farmhouse in the middle of California. So it wasn't like realistic for me to go into a studio and like do all of that. And I didn't know what I was going to do with the product. And you know what I mean? So Jeffrey says to me, well, we're going to get you a laptop and you're going to learn how to do it all yourself. And I was like, what? Yeah, right. And I mean, I'd done analog recording before in my four tracks and eight tracks when I was a kid. You know, I would record my own albums, but to a degree of like, I wanted to make a John Mellencamp, Sheryl Crow record. So I wanted, this is a rock record. It isn't like four track, you know. So I needed to create all the layers. I'm thinking, how am I going to do this? Well, within 6 weeks, we had the whole record. I watched hundreds of hours of YouTube tutorials till I just figured out how everything I wanted to make was made, learned how to mix master.
Well, talk to me about some of the gear for a second. You mentioned getting a laptop, but what other pieces of gear did you get? I mean, I see you have the Shure SM7B there.
Yeah, I already had a Michael Jackson microphone. I had an interface. I used a lot of plugins, BBC Symphony Orchestra, and even horn plugins. I played the bass. I played the guitars, acoustic, electric, slide, all different layers. But then there's, you know, a lot of keys. But I didn't even have, for this record, I didn't even have one of those keyboard interfaces, the MIDIs. I had to use my laptop as the keyboard, the keys on the laptop, and there's no key. You know what I mean? Trying to play chords when you don't even know what T, Y, U is.
Right.
But I just had to make it work, and eventually we got there. It was hardest using the keyboard for the horns and strings because I didn't know where I was. I just had to trust my ear because I couldn't see it on the keyboard. Now I do, obviously. I've stepped it up with my studio. But for that record, I just literally used what I had, and I figured it out. I don't know. We just were flying through it, and it's got cowbell in there. It's got like four different layers of drums, which I like put reverbs and different effects on to make it sound as big as possible. Yeah, there's a lot going on in it, but it also sounds very spacious.
That's pretty cool that you're able to do that. What's the DAW of choice?
GarageBand.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. So
I know.
I mean,
not on the iPhone, the laptop right. version. But then I obviously have used Reason, and there's lots of plugins I'm using. So it's not like it's not how people perceive GarageBand, because I used it more the way I would use Pro Tools.
Right.
It was just the easiest way for me to get into it when I didn't know how to operate at all as an engineer, because I usually would go into the studio with a guitar and the song already done and have someone do that side of it. So I needed something as easy as possible for me to eventually get more complex with it. And that was my first Well, that was actually Jeffrey's suggestion when we first got into it, because I mean, I put it down at first. I was like, I'm not using GarageBand. Like, are you serious? Like, this ain't some jingle.
There is nothing wrong with GarageBand.
I mean, this is a serious piece of work. And actually, I was surprised how great and easy GarageBand was.
That's pretty cool. So you and Jeffrey produced this album together.
It's how you use it.
Yes, we did. You are exactly right.
We co-produced it.
It's how you use it.
It's really what you play on it. You can make it sound great. The riffs, we got the right amps in there and it had everything I needed. And if it didn't have what I needed, I would go out there and find it in a plugin. Yeah.
I used to teach at the audio engineering college and I would tell students all the time, look, it's not about the gear, it's about the person performing. So take the time to capture that person and capture what they're able to do. It's just like you're a guitar player and you're a very good guitar player. And you're going to sound very good no matter what guitar I put in your hands. Obviously, if I put a better guitar in, you might be more comfortable, but the talent is coming from your fingers. It's not coming from the guitar
itself. That's right. It's the feeling.
And it's the same thing in engineering.
Yeah, with engineering, like with harmonies and with singing, to get that take, that with feeling, it's not about what software I was using. And, you know, it could be a $500 mic or whatever, but as long as I'm capturing the feeling, even if the mic was a less expensive one, if I'm capturing the sound I want, like I'm happy with that. Because I've even felt that with some guitars, like over the years with acoustic guitars that I've tried, like some of my favorite guitars, obviously I love the J45 Gibson, don't get me wrong. But sometimes when I travel with different acoustics, I find like more of a broken, like really cheap guitar. And I somehow fall in love with it and can play it really well because it's like aged well. And it's the way it just fits with my body more than how much it's worth.
The comfort.
I guess that's how I've taken. Yeah. And I guess with the software as well, it's all how you use it.
It's what you get used to. It's what you're comfortable with. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm a Pro Tools user. I've used Pro Tools throughout my career, and I've worked on it from when it was Sound Tools, when it was a two-track mastering software. So, I mean, I've used it for quite some time, and I'm used to it. So that's why I like it so much. It's not that other software can't do what Pro Tools does. It's just that I'm used to it, and it's where I find my comfort zone. So, but let's get back into this album. I mean, because this is the first one you've recorded like this, and it's also the first one you've had this much input in. In the past, have you recorded in traditional studios with tradition, you know, taking musicians in and doing things traditionally?
Well, All the World to See was done with professional session players in Australia in a professional studio. And that was done very differently. But yeah, I did write all the riffs and the songs and everything. But I guess having this much creative control was very different because my Live at Big Bear album, that was just me live.
Big Bear's awesome, by the way.
Thank you. That's a beautiful place. But yeah, the crowd and the place was a gorgeous night up there under the stars. And we made that into an album as well because I wanted something to enter the Josie Awards. So that came together very quickly. But Danny's Diamonds isn't like anything I worked on because I had so much say in it and basically every beat where things would go. And then Jeffrey would tell me, oh, I'm hearing some more drums here. Or we'd work together really well with that. But it's just so much more rewarding when you're doing it all from your room.
Right. So when you have that much control and you're the decision maker, how do you handle balancing the difference of styles, the different genres and stuff? How do you handle deciding what goes on the album?
Well, that was really a decision between me and my manager. These songs, because they were all written at the same time, had they all matched each other? And we knew that the timing was on and My Heart's Alarm had to be included because they also had a rock element to them. But the others that aren't released yet, there's a lot of riffs in there. There's a lot of wah-wah. There's a lot of, like, there's one song called Rock and Roll in My Soul, and it's got, like, it's like a summer cow. It's got cowbell in their horns, a lot of drums, a lot of that, you know, E, like Proud Mary E. So I guess we knew the direction we wanted to go as soon as the songs started coming out, and then the production kind of just flowed from that, but it just kind of happened by itself. I feel like it just was a magical month of creation.
So you put all this together yourself with help of Jeffrey, and you do this in your home. So did you have any challenges of how to set up your home and make things so they were acoustically sound?
Well, at the time I was living in like a farmhouse, country house,
right,
in New Piper, in the middle of California, and it was very quiet up there. There was like an apricot tree and a German shepherd and a couple of rabbits running around. So it was very quiet. And the koalas, like you heard before. Yeah. And so I feel like I had a lot of time on my hands to just make music.
Well, that's quite an environment for California. You don't typically see that in California.
Yeah, I don't know if I would have made that and even learned as much as I did in a short period of time if I was living down in LA, because there's so much busyness and traffic going on. But the fact that I was in my own space, it felt like I was able to just create. It was a good feeling.
So let's talk about that. You talk about you're able to create, and that's, you're a songwriter. So you create, and you create from the heart, and you create from your environment, and you take all that in.
Yeah.
But now you're adding an element of technology that you're not typically familiar with. You're bringing in GarageBand in this particular case, and the different equipment, whether it be the microphone, preamps, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So did the challenge of the equipment, did that cause any hiccups in your writing process?
I think it actually grew the way I write songs now, because this new song I wrote the other day and I've been performing it live, I can already imagine what I'm going to do to it when I start tackling it in the studio. Like, I want it to be even larger than the last record. So there's going to be more harmonies. There's going to be more layers of hand claps and like just like open space where we take drums out and fill it with other things like tambourine and like electric guitars. So I'm very excited to, like, with the arrangements and the possibilities that I have there, but you also got to like rein it in. So if something's working live, I just try to make it sound better than it does live, hopefully, when I go and record it.
You mentioned that, it makes me think of Sheryl Crow, which I feel is an influence of yours. It feels like your music has a lot of the Sheryl Crow vibe to it.
Yeah, I hope so, because a lot of my music is about the summer. I call a lot of my music summer rock. And she has that kind of vibe to her music too. So I definitely have looked up to a lot of her songs over the years.
But with that said, you're talking about the technology and stuff. Do you feel like now that you've done that, that you have some engineering chops that will assist you in the future?
Well, yeah, because I got the pleasure of, when I was invited to write with William Lee Golden of the Oak Ridge Boys, he gave me the permission to produce the songs, so that was an honor. He's a great writer, and I look up to him and his band, and for him to let me, you know, put the whole track down and bring it to him, that was pretty nice. So, yeah, I feel like I am getting accepted from my producing skills and engineering, so that's nice to hear, and hopefully this body of work speaks for itself once people start hearing more of it. The timing was on the new version. I hope you liked it with all the strings and everything.
Yeah, I'm glad you're getting respected for it, because you got some great music and your talents are undeniable. I mean, you have some really great talent, especially with the guitar there and your vocals.
Thank you.
You mentioned the Oak Ridge Boys. We had Scotty Simpson on. Mm-hmm. He talked all about his time playing with the Oak Ridge Boys. And when they came through town last year, he took me and my wife, well, we took him out to dinner and he took us backstage. So it was a great experience.
Oh, amazing.
They're coming back through town here this summer. They'll be here in June and we're going to go back and see him again. It was a great show. I mean, great.
Amazing.
Time.
With Joe Bonsall in there.
I know, huh?
Joe Bonsall is just a ray of light, really.
He really is. He's one of the nicest people I've ever met.
The time I've met him. Yeah. He's so bubbly and just like, I've met him a couple of times now, and I met him on the Oak Ridge Boys tour bus last time when I was in Nashville. And he's like, Danny, off Twitter. He remembered me and it was so nice.
He is awesome, and I'm so glad we get to see him this time around because it was his last performance, so it was really cool.
Oh, yeah.
So as we're talking about your record here, and you played a lot on the record, and I know you programmed some stuff, but did you have any other musicians collaborate with you?
No.
None?
None.
Did everything?
Yeah.
You just say it like it's nothing. Yeah, I did everything.
But like, I didn't actually play the drums, you know. Well, I had to like bring that up. I had to make them. Yeah, I had to make them.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a bloody headache. I did not enjoy the drums. I'm just, between the drums and the horns, oh God, nearly had a nervous breakdown. Here comes my 19th nervous breakdown.
Tell me what it was like for you to learn how to program
drums. It would have maybe been quicker with the drummer.
Probably would have been quicker, yes.
Jeffrey had the biggest input in the drums because I would like do it the way I wanted it, template it, you know, with arrangement track and everything.
But what was the actual process? Were you on your keyboard again?
I played a guide track to a click track the whole way. And then I would go in an arrangement track and put intro verse, and then I would change it as I wanted. And then it would kind of set it up, and then I'd bring in like a plug-in for the drums for the effect I wanted. Say I wanted it to sound more like Foo Fighters or whatever sound I wanted it to be. I would pull different effects and then change up the drum kits that I wanted at the time, and then I would layer them and put, like, if I wanted a bit more delay or compression, I would like add heaps of layers until I got exactly the sound I was thinking for that song. Because like each song I did it differently. I didn't, like, obviously some songs didn't suit the same drum sound, so I'd have to find exactly what I was hearing in my head, and then I would do it the way I thought was great, you know. And I'd play it for Jeffrey Panzer, and he would say, that drum roll, it needs an extra hi-hat. Oh, Jeff, stop it. No, I've just worked on it for 2 hours. No, it's fine. No, Daddy, trust me. It's missing a hi-hat. We drove each other crazy.
And did you put the hi-hat in or did he?
He ended up doing it because he wouldn't let go. But he's a perfectionist, and so am I, but even more so him, I think. He really would push me. Like, there was one time when it was in a song called Call Your Name, and I had a riff for it, right? And I thought it was a great riff. And he was like, that's not the opener. And I was like, what? He's like, this has to be a better riff. You're not starting the song right. And I said, well, what do you want from me? You know? And it turns into, Danny, go and listen to Layla by Eric Clapton. I said, I already heard that song many years ago. And he said, well, no, I want you to go listen to it again and study it and study why that riff works. And so I did. And I came back with my riff, and it did make the song a lot better. So, yeah, he did push me to get greatness, I think.
Did you ever see the documentary about Tom Dowd?
I thought you were going to say the documentary Spinal Tap.
No.
With the cowbell.
That was great, too. No, the Tom Dowd documentary. Tom Dowd was the engineer who recorded the song Layla.
Oh.
And he had the song pulled up, and he was able to mute the different tracks or solo tracks. And he soloed the two guitar tracks in that song. And they're two guitar tracks that by themselves you would never picture them working together. But when you put them into the music and put them together, they just create something magical. It was a pretty impressive documentary if you haven't seen it.
Wow, I actually haven't seen that, but that does remind me of a moment we had working on the record. And it was when I was finishing a solo and I really liked it. And then I knew that we were missing something. Jeffrey said, take your tuning peg and wind it down at the end of the solo. I said, really? Blended really well. Little things like that, you know? You just gotta, I guess, I wouldn't have thought of that, but it's great having two minds. We come from different places in the industry, so.
Well, that's what collaboration's all about, right? When you're dealing with another producer, especially another. Producers are known for being perfectionists. I get that. I'm a perfectionist myself, but when you're dealing with another producer, you get another set of ideas. And when you get that set of ideas, it gives you something to build on. So it's not just solo project, it actually gives you something to think about or somebody to push you further.
Yeah, I feel like Jeffrey was like more on the drums, the bass, and the, telling me where to put that and that like horn section than I was. Like I was just like pressing buttons.
What kind of say did you guys have in the video?
Well, I shot that in the desert. I knew that song was like a movie, like a New York lovers movie where you're passing someone and you miss them by just a second, or you don't, you know, and you're in the middle of Central Park and it's snowing and it's a Christmas movie, you know. Anyway, so I took the footage, sent it, and Jeffrey and Evan B. Stone, two amazing guys. I think they've worked on Three Doors Down together. And I think that video, like Three Doors Down, shot videos in Cincinnati, where you're from, actually.
Nice.
And, you know, we were in the process of doing this video. And at first we were going to have me on a billboard, like a green screen type idea. But with AI, sometimes you can make it work, right? But it just wasn't working. So that was Jeff's idea to put me in the middle of Times Square. And it just, I was really happy with how it came out. It was such a fun fun video to make with the guys, a legendary team, that's for sure.
Well, the video is very cool, and the special effects are pretty cool. We're putting you up on all the different billboards and different screens and everything. It's very impressive.
Especially since I didn't have to go there.
Right.
I was really impressed. I couldn't believe it. And then the fireworks at the end. Yeah, I love that.
I'm so glad you had a chance to do it. I mean, it looks good. It's very impressive. We mentioned your guitar playing. You have an incredible talent, and this picture of this guitar here is an amazing guitar. So can you tell us, I know you started at a young age, but can you tell us how it all came about?
Yeah, that's my favorite guitar. That's my PRS SE Silver Sky. And it's in the stone blue color, my favorite shade. I love what I'm working with PRS guitars. But I picked up the guitar, got into Peter Frampton, Mark Knopfler, the Eagles, and a lot of that classic rock, Led Zeppelin for sure. Yeah, I was obviously brought up on a lot of country music, but when I started hearing Stevie Ray Vaughan Double Trouble, I got given an actual tape of him, and I started studying the videotape, and I don't think tapes are around anymore. VSHs or VHSs.
Don't do it.
Anyway, so back in the, I got given one of his, and I don't even know where my mum found one of those recorders, but I would study that Stevie Ray Vaughan Double Trouble and wanted to play like him. And he was like so alternative compared to Hendrix, and I wouldn't stop. Some nights I would play 7 hours or 8 hours a night, and my grades weren't going too well at school. I was a very smart kid, but my grades weren't very good because I was playing guitar all night. Ooh, I would say obsessed.
There you go.
Yeah, and my parents just let me be. They designated a whole room for me to just create. And some weeks I was getting 2 guitar lessons a week because I became so... I started taking my original songs into my guitar lessons and started saying to my teacher, Ian, like, I want to learn how to make my own riffs and put this into this. And I'm like 15, 16. And it's like, I couldn't believe I found something that I just gravitated to. It changed my life, like the guitar, because it took me to places I was kind of shy. But then it opened me up. Like I became very social because music, anytime someone would talk to me, they knew I play guitar. So it was like a good talking point. So I'm really grateful that I found that and didn't do the dancing that I wasn't so good at, because the guitar really, it's taken me basically to America.
Well, there you go. Well, it was worth the effort, right? I mean, all that effort you put into it. I mean, I know we talked earlier about winning awards for your vocals and so forth, but you were even featured in Guitar World magazine. What was that like?
Well, that was, you know, that was on my bucket list for many years because when I went to my...
By the way.
And that was the fireworks and the tennis garden. That was definitely to play in a stadium. But no, the guitar world, because my first guitar teacher, I used to walk in and he had big posters of Kiss and who else? Marilyn Manson. Oh, that was all guitar world. I remember that stuff. It was 9 and 10. And I used to look up and go, oh my gosh, those guys are on guitar world, you know. And every guy in Perth had, I heard, and in family that are into guitars, they used to have guitar world by their toilet seat. Sorry, restroom. Gotta say that in America.
You're
toilet seat. Okay, I'm allowed to say it. Okay, and they used to have that while they're in the loop. They would have the guitar world. So it was an honor to be on guitar world.
That's not the reason why it was an honor, but it was an honor to be on.
No, not because of that, but because everybody had that in their home.
Right, it's monumental. I mean, it was a big
deal. Jimi Hendrix was on the cover, I mean.
What's next for you? Yeah. What do you have on? What's next in your bucket?
Well, let's see. I want to drop more music this year. I want to also get back in the studio, which means my house, and put down some of these newer ones I've been writing. I want to just continue to tour and maybe crisscross more of the United States, playing maybe on the East Coast, because I'm starting to get a lot of support out there. So I really want to go back to Nashville and for the Josie Awards again this year. And I'm just excited to be playing in as many venues as possible out here because I'm really enjoying performing in California and playing the new music live. What I love as a musician is performing live. So I can't get enough of that.
All right, my friend. Well, we do this thing here we call Unsung Heroes, where we take a moment to shine the light on somebody who's worked behind the scenes or somebody who's helped you along the way. Do you have anybody you would like to shine a little light on?
I would probably shout out my dad, George, for being my road manager for all these years and lugging all my amps and all those hard years of all the pubs and playing to one person all the way to thousands. He would go everywhere with me, and he's still my number one. And also Jeff Panzer for believing in me, trying to help me fulfill my dream and get my songs and music out there and telling everybody he knows. So thank you, Jeff. I've got about a team of about 15 people, and I don't want to leave any names out, but just from Epic Roxy and Angel, Lisa and Donna, I don't want to leave it, Mark Hudson, Nigel. I just got like a whole bunch of people, George Martinez, Caden, this whole bunch of people from Twitter that have made content for me. And I'm sorry if I left any names out there, but like, you know who you are, because they have been keeping the Danny train going. And it's really you guys that have helped me get this music out there. So thank you to everybody out there that's been doing that. Oh, and Corinne. Hi, Corinne.
A big thanks to Danny for taking the time to share stories with us. And thank you for taking the time to hang with me here. I really do appreciate it. Danny, she is quite an inspiration. And if we can learn anything at all from her, it should be to never give up on your dreams, because, well, you never know where they're going to take you. If you would like to find out more about Danny or this episode, please visit jfranzi.com/episode62. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to The Jay Franzi Show. Make sure you visit us at jfranzi.com. Follow, connect, and say hello. This episode has been brought to you by VR Knives, your source for 100% custom knives made by a true rock star. So, if you're in the market for a new piece of art, reach out to VR Knives. 407-421-5528. 407-421-5528.